Meet Joe Investor. He's always on the wrong side of the market. Last year, Joe Investor was shorting stocks when he should have been long. And the year before that, he was parked in cash when he should have been invested in bonds. Are you always on the wrong side of the market just like Joe? The Profit Strategy Newsletter at ETFGuide.com will help you to succeed. Join today and get a $100 gift by using promo code JOE100. Go to ETFGuide.com to get started and promise yourself to never ever be on the wrong side of the market.
You're listening to the Index Investing Show. This is America's only weekly program focused on the important stock and bond indexes and the financial products that track them.
And now presenting your host,
Ron DeLegge. Ron DeLegge.
Well, well, well. Welcome to the program. Coming up on today's show, a portfolio strategy Warren Buffett would approve. We'll get into that. We'll also got a real treat for you on today's broadcast. Earlier in the week, I caught up with Tim Knight. He is the author and financial historian. His new book is titled Panic, Prosperity, and Progress, Five Centuries of History and the Markets. It's a delightful read. So Tim Knight coming up later. Like I said, he is author of this brand new book. We're going to get into all the crazy manias, the progress, the panic, the insanity. If you'd like to join us to talk about anything on your mind, financial, whether that's an individual stock, ETF, the economy, you want to talk about emerging markets. How about the sinking gold market? You want to talk about that? Over the past week, we've seen precious metals. And, of course, mining stocks really take a beating. So is the worst over? Is the worst ahead? 877-711-5611 is the number. I'm Ron DeLegge. I'm host of this broadcast. I'm also editor of ETFGuide.com. Our April newsletter has just been released into the wild. Go to ETFGuide.com and get a copy. You will be delighted with not just the humor of the financial markets, but more importantly, the strategic setups, where we're placing our latest bets, as well as how we're positioning assets for what yet is to come. Again, 877-711-5611 is the number. You can tweet the show live at Index Show is my Twitter handle. You can also call us. Again, 877-711-5611. 5611. Now, let's get into something that happened this past week before we start talking stocks and all that other stuff. You know, since Tim Knight is going to be joining the show and talking about all the crazy manias and things that have the madness of the crowds, how about this for modern day or contemporary tulip mania type of a behavior? A Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a perfect example of a mania today that I think is very akin to tulips of the past. Now, Napoleon Bonaparte once quipped that fame and glory is fleeting, but obscurity is forever. And as it turns out, that's a fitting description of Bitcoin's illustrious past and probable future. Besides wild price swings, besides government bans, besides massive security breaches and fraud, the $8 billion Bitcoin market's latest hurdle is something nobody, except for Mark Rich, can escape. That's taxes. And the latest IRS ruling now taxes Bitcoins as property and not currency. And this is significant, ladies and gentlemen. It means that now Bitcoin miners are going to be forced to include the fair market value of all their Bitcoins as gross income on the date of receipt. On the date of receipt. Can you believe this? This is horrible. This is exactly the kind of adverse tax ruling that nobody in the Bitcoin religion, especially Andreessen and Horowitz, wanted to see. How about all those crazies who were spending $17 million a day for a shot at mining $4 million worth of Bitcoins? Ouch. Furthermore, this IRS ruling is going to drastically reduce the volume of Bitcoin transactions because now Bitcoin holders are going to have to calculate potential capital gains whenever they use Bitcoin to buy something. So let's say that you have enough nerve, for example, to go out and buy a $100,000 Tesla with Bitcoins bought that you bought for $50,000. So again, you're buying a $100,000 Tesla, and you're going to use that purchase. You're going to use Bitcoins that you bought. Your basis on the Bitcoins is $50,000. That's going to trigger an immediate tax bill of $50,000 in capital gains for you, the car buyer, and the car seller will pay $100,000 of gross income. So not a very good deal at all if you're a Bitcoin owner. So what do you think about this Bitcoin nonsense? Like I said, this is just the beginning of the road to obsolescence for Bitcoin. 877-711-5611 is the number. This is the Index Investing Show. We're here. This is a live program. If you want to talk about anything on your mind, a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, want to talk a little bit about Warren Buffett. I had a chance to go through his latest Berkshire Hathaway annual report. And of course, one of the greatest investors of all time, he is. And what would a world-class investment portfolio look like that even Warren Buffett would bless? Well, his 2013 letter to Berkshire Hathaway shareholders gives us some clues. He says, quote, "The know-nothing investor who both diversifies and keeps his costs minimal is virtually certain to get satisfactory results. Indeed, the unsophisticated investor who is realistic about his shortcomings is likely to obtain better long-term results than the knowledgeable professional who is blind to even a single weakness," end of quote. And that's Warren Buffett from his 2013 Berkshire Hathaway letter to shareholders. And this is just an excerpt of many things that he talked about in the latest letter. But it's interesting. Instead of instructing people, instead of preaching to them and telling them, well, you need to build an investment portfolio of hand-picked individual stocks, just like me, Warren Buffett, so you can beat the hell out of the market. See, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say that. In fact, he recommends that people begin their investment portfolio, that they start with a plain vanilla S&P 500 index fund. Can you believe this? The world's greatest investor recommending a boring, a dull, plain vanilla S&P 500 index fund. What's gotten into him? Now, we're going to talk a little bit more a little bit later on the show. I want to get into a little bit more detail about this because it goes beyond when building a logical investment portfolio that perfectly matches you. It goes beyond just an S&P 500 fund. I mean, there's a lot more to it than just that. So we'll talk about that. 877-711-5611 is the number. Let's take a quick look at where some of the key financial markets stand so far in 2014. This is your weather report. And these are year-to-date figures. They're courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. Taking a look at the total U.S. stock market, ticker symbol VTI is the ETF that tracks this, up just over 0.5% since the beginning of the year, holding on to its gains. We've seen some momentum stocks losing their luster, and those biotechs are falling off a cliff lately, and some of those other social media stocks that were hot before are starting to cool off. The sizzle is starting to fizzle. So I think in a very direct way, this is a warning sign. This is a warning sign for the broader market. If this continues, if you're starting to see the leaders beginning to lag, what is that going to mean for the broader market? I think it's a sign of more volatility ahead and trouble. So prepare yourself. Buckle in. Cash is not trash. And also, the VIX, by the way, which is edged up a little bit, is still what I would call in my buy zone. And the way I like to play the VIX is through options, call options. Whenever the VIX gets to a certain level, as we've told our subscribers at ETFGuide.com, you go long. And so the VIX, I think, is an excellent way to play higher volatility. Not a big fan of VIX ETFs, but if you don't trade options and you don't have that approved in your account, well, that's a kind of a last resort way of playing the VIX. See ticker symbol VIXY This is the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. If you'd like to join us, we're here. 877-711-5611. At Index shows my Twitter handle. I'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
Gold bugs, are you panicking? We've seen the price of gold and silver slip up here over the past 2 weeks. Gold miners, which has been one of the best performing sectors outside of the S&P 500, ticker symbol GDX. We've been talking about this one for quite some time. One of the reasons is we went long gold miners in our monthly ETF profit strategy newsletter. We also do weekly picks. And gold miners, GDX, was an ETF that we featured on December 26th, right at the bottom as gold miners were being creamed and the sentiment was at extreme levels, basically overly bearish. And so what we had happen was, well, we rode that. We rode that. That was a great trade. We did exit gold miners this past week. Gold miners, by the way, since March 14th, have lost 13%, and they are still up year-to-date 14%, but basically what's happened here over the past 2 weeks is gold miners have lost half of their performance, half of their yearly gain they've lost in about 2 weeks. So it's been a pretty mighty move to the downside for gold miners. Ticker symbol DUST is the direction ultra-short gold miners aims for triple daily opposite performance to gold mining stocks. That's been a great trade here, DUST, over the past 2 weeks. But the question is the run over for gold miners? Well, on a valuation basis, it's still a pretty cheap sector, a pretty cheap area of the equity market to own. So from a fundamental perspective, that's good. The other thing, though, that gold miners that you need to keep in mind about this particular sector is, as precious metals go, so goes gold miner sector. So whatever happens with precious metals themselves is basically being amplified via gold miners. And as long as we continue to see weakness with the precious metals themselves, and we have over the past several weeks, well, you'll see even more weakness in gold miners. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that what we're seeing globally in terms of political turmoil, right now it seems the market doesn't really care about that. Right now the fear level has sort of tapered down. But the other thing too is that bullishness for gold has gotten to frothy levels. And that too is another factor that plays into this. Whenever you see, and this is what we watch for at ETF Guide, extremes in sentiment. So whenever you see, for example, overly bearish sentiment, well, that's a contrarian indicator that's time to go long. Conversely, if we see overly bullish sentiment, which is actually what we've seen here over the past several weeks in terms of gold, all of these hedge funds and performance chasers piling into gold because, well, it's been rising. It's still got a positive year-to-date gain, and it's still outperforming on a year-to-date basis U.S. stocks, international stocks, emerging market stocks. So all of these performance chases have been quite bullish, in fact, at extreme levels. So only natural to see somewhat of a pullback, because when the crowd starts to pile in, well, usually the crowd is wrong. So these are some of the things happening. If you'd like to get the latest, our very latest technical forecast on gold and miners, just go to etfguide.com and check out what my colleague Chad Carnes is doing. He does some great work. He was on the show several weeks ago. 877-711-5611 is the number. We're here. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. My Twitter handle, @IndexShow. I got some videos up. My latest one My latest one is at YouTube. And I've actually sent out some tweets and links on our Facebook account to that. And it talks about China. Is China a bargain? I've been very negative about emerging market stocks, Russia, China, the BRICS. BRIC, by the way, B-R-I-C is an acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, and China. So stocks that follow the BRICS have been a negative area, have been a bad area to invest in over the past few years. And this past 2 weeks, they've staged a 5% gain. And some of those specific markets like China and Russia themselves have really spiked higher here over the past 2 weeks. So is this the bottom? Well, absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is nothing more than a dead cat bounce, ladies and gentlemen. And the reason I say that, the reason we have not reached the bottom in emerging market stocks, especially China and Russia, is because we haven't seen capitulation selling. Capitulation selling is when the bulls throw in the towel. And we haven't seen that yet. They're very stubborn. And the only way we will ever see a bottom in some of these emerging markets is when capitulation selling kicks in. And we haven't seen that yet. When we do see it, I'll let you know. But the other thing too, especially for China, all these flunk outs saying, well, China's crisis is not as bad. It's not going to be a significant event. Let me just say this. China's financial crisis isn't over because it hasn't even started, you morons. So all these economists, these flunk out types that basically are saying that it's not going to be that bad, well, they're wrong. They're wrong because nobody knows what the extent of China's shadow banking system is. Not even the People's Bank of China knows what they're in for. One of the problems with China, besides a high level of corruption, is the fact that there's no transparency. You're dealing with an opaque financial system, an opaque economy, and when you've got that in conjunction with slowing economic activity, slowing PMI, as well as negative performance in stocks, well, that tells you what's going on. You know, the stock market is a leading indicator. We always tell you that. That's what you focus on. And so far, Chinese stocks continue to be a bad place to invest. But this is an opportunity for some of you bears, a second opportunity. Some of you that missed the first round of bearish action in some of these emerging market stocks, you're getting a second chance here. And the rise, don't be fooled by this. Don't be a sucker. This rise that we're seeing in emerging market stocks in the BRICS and Russia and China, nothing but a dead cat bounce. And a great opportunity for some of you bears to take in positions because, well, the rocky performance ain't over. 877-711-5611 is the number. You're listening to the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. We're here. If you want to join us to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, you want to argue with me, that's fine. Also, I want to let you know that earlier in the week, I caught up with Tim Knight. He's a financial historian. He's also the author of a brand new book titled Panic, Prosperity, and Progress, Five Centuries of History and the Markets. He will be joining me in the next segment. And boy, I'm looking forward to that. Tim has written an outstanding book, and those who ignore history are condemned to repeat it. And we're going to talk about some of the historical events of the past and how they relate to today. I already began the show talking with you about the modern-day tulip mania, none other than Bitcoin. Bitcoin, which I'm going to rename it Misfit Coin. And I warned you several months ago, actually in December to be exact, when Bitcoin was trading at about the same price of 1 ounce of gold, I said, Bitcoin, stay away from it. And I'll have to dig up the archive of that, but that's a time-stamped alarm, a warning sign. I warned you about this Bitcoin nonsense. And what do you know? What do you know? Bitcoin prices have already been cut in half and they may get cut in half again. This is the Index Investing Show. I'm Ron DeLegge. I'll be right back.
The Index Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
Meet Joe Investor. He wants badly to succeed at investing, but he's always on the wrong side of the market. For example, last year, Joe Investor was long commodity ETFs when he should have been short. And the year before that, he was parked in cash when he should have been invested in long-term U.S. Treasuries. And what about this year? Well, like all the times before, Joe Investor is on the wrong side of the market once again. What about you? Are you just like Joe Investor? The Profit Strategy Newsletter at ETFGuide.com will help you to succeed by keeping you on the right side of the market. We tell you what to buy, what to sell, and when to do it. Join today and get a $50 bonus by using promo code JOE50. Our no bull approach to investing is world famous. Our monthly newsletter, our weekly picks, and our technical forecast will keep you ahead of the pack. Go to ETFGuide.com to get started. And one more thing. Promise yourself to never, ever be on the wrong side of the market.
Many of today's most successful traders and investors credit their study of history as being the secret behind their uncanny ability to anticipate and capitalize on market responses to external events. In his latest book, titled Panic, Prosperity, and Progress, Tim Knight talks about this, and I'm pleased to introduce him. Tim, welcome to the Index Investing Show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's begin with financial history. You know, does it really matter? Why should today's generation of investors care about the past?
Well, in this day and age, you know, as technology progresses, it's very easy to get seduced into the idea that what happened 2 or 3 years ago or 20 or 30 years ago and certainly hundreds of years ago is completely irrelevant. I mean, people today look down and if you've got iPhone 4 instead of the iPhone 5, they assume that we're constantly in a state of learning and knowledge is cumulative. But it's really not because, you know, we're all born into this world ignorant and our parents try to teach us, but we largely ignore them. And the lessons of history are really just partially absorbed by a few. And so my sense is that humans and their behavior really haven't changed that much over thousands of years. And even though people in the year 1600 would be completely bedazzled and flummoxed if we brought them into our world and showed them things that we're accustomed to, the way that we think and the way we regard risk and opportunity, I think, is really no different than it has been for millennia.
Tim Knight joining us. He's the author of a brand new book titled Panic, Prosperity, and Progress, 5 Centuries of History and the Markets. It's available at Amazon.com. Go pick up a copy. Now, leverage can be a powerful ally. It can also be a deadly enemy. You write about the Hunt family, who in the 1970s and early 80s became one of America's richest families, but then they lost everything. So what did the Hunt family do wrong, and how can we learn from them?
Well, it was a really astonishing story, and what's remarkable about it is how long they were right in what they said, because they had made their fortune in oil. They had made one of the great discoveries in Saudi Arabia, and their view in the very early 70s was that they had to protect their wealth and grow it to the best of their ability, and they were firmly convinced that surging inflation was on the horizon, and since the United States had departed the gold standard completely, and there was really nothing holding the government back from printing money, that they needed to focus on hard assets. And you can understand the mentality. If you made your fortune in something you can hold and sell, like crude oil, you're going to have an affinity for that. And so they began accumulating silver in small quantities at first, but as the years progressed, their investment became smarter and smarter looking. And the view that they could insulate their wealth from the ravages of inflation, which they very correctly predicted would be raging during the 70s, only egged on this notion that they had to amass huge quantities of silver that even the largest commodities exchanges in the world. And as silver went from $1 to $2 to $5 to $10 to $20 to $30 and kept raging higher, they just kept gobbling up silver not just through means of their own cash, but also through a lot of borrowed money. Because as rich as the Hunts were, the quantities we're speaking of even challenged those kinds of fortunes. So they really increased their average price, what they paid for it, greatly. So although the silver they bought at $1 and $2 was wildly profitable, the kinds of masses of the silver they were buying when it was $35 needed much higher prices to be profitable. And what's kind of tragic about the story in a way is that the exchanges themselves stepped in brutally to stop this soaring market. And it reached the point where, although it's incredible to think of it, they forbid any more buying. Buying was literally not allowed. And that tends to put a stop to rising markets.
Yes,
and as things fell, as they fell, it accelerated. I mean, can you imagine today if it was illegal to buy a stock? That would tend to depress Apple's share price. So silver started to fall with even greater speed than it rose. And before it was all over, what had been one of the world's great fortunes was reduced to a few price horses in a stable and a bankruptcy court.
Yeah, a powerful lesson in the danger of over-leverage. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Index Investing Show. Pleased to be talking with Tim Knight. He's the author of a brand new book titled Panic, Prosperity, and Progress, Five Centuries of History and the Markets. And I've read a lot of other books along this same line of taking a look at financial history. I can tell you that this is an outstanding book that's readable, unlike some of the other textbooks that precede it. Now, give us some context from your perspective between the frenzy of social media and biotech stocks today versus the frenzy of dot-com stocks in the late 90s. Where are we at in terms of the mania meter? Have we matched the previous era, or have we surpassed it in terms of sheer lunacy?
Yeah. Well, as much as I roll my eyes at the term, it's different this time. In a way, it is different this time, but not in the sense that people usually mean. A friend of mine, we were chatting over coffee about this yesterday, because I myself had built a company back during the Internet bubble, although it had the freakish property of not having any venture funding and making money. And we did sell it. But he was a colleague of mine during that time, and he was asking me, how does the present mania compare to the Internet bubble? And I would simply describe it as much more narrow but much deeper. And what I mean by that is, instead of hundreds and hundreds of rather ridiculously valued public companies that are rather small, you have a very concentrated handful of public and private companies that are extraordinarily valued. So to put a specific example on it, I don't think that WhatsApp would have been feasible even during the Internet bubble. The notion that a company with no revenue, to say nothing of no profits, would be acquired for $19 billion would make even, you know, February 2000 inhabitants fall over dead with shock. But there's just one WhatsApp, as opposed to 100 items that are 1% that size. So it's a different form of mania, but the size of that concentration makes it just mind-blowing, even for our friends from 14 years ago.
In reference to the 2008 financial crisis, you write, quote, "The unknown outcome from the entire crisis is what will become of the staggering and persistent deficits the U.S. government is generating. The cure for the ills of the financial crisis may, in the end, require another cure of its own," end of quote. Tell us more.
Well, one of my favorite philosophers, as it were, was the late comedian George Carlin. And he put forth the idea that the United States public is really inured to the fact that anything will ever really go wrong. He called it the Great American Okey-Doke. And you can get used to that, because every movie you watch has a happy ending, and things just work out in the end. And as few folks in the U.S., I think, could articulate what is being done to prop things up right now, I think even those who do understand it can't articulate, and I include myself here, as to what the end game will be. I guess there's this vague general feeling that the economy will get so healthy that the debt's just not going to be a problem. And when you're dealing with a 0% interest environment, debt really isn't much of a problem. The thing is that there hasn't been a time ever, ever, ever that the nations of the earth have engaged in this cooperative and organized creation of credit to shore up what had been a financial disaster in 2008. And there are plenty of wringing hands about what might happen here. Will we go into currency wars? Are you going to see gold go to $100,000 an ounce? Are you going to see Weimar hyperinflation or something the world's never seen before? Even though I've written this 450-page book about all these different historical phenomena, I don't pretend to know where it's going to end up. One thing it seems everybody agrees upon is, well, we all know this is going to end badly, but we just don't know how. So the I think the one lesson that everybody learned, particularly financial pundits, is to put in a quote that you can point to later that says that something bad is going to happen. You just don't know when. So I'm afraid I don't have a stock answer for you on that.
A fearless stock market is a dangerous place to invest, and one measure of fear is the VIX. And it's been rather quiet over the past several years. What do you make of the depressed level of the VIX and what it means for stock market investors today, Tim?
Yeah, it's interesting. The VIX actually peaked before the market bottomed. I mean, if we look at the VIX, the highest point it reached was on October 24 of 2008. And that was a full, almost 5 months before the bottom was actually reached. So the wheels seemed to be coming off late in October. And what happened over the next couple of years was that people never really took their eyes off that rearview mirror. They were always worried about when that terrible thing would come back again. And so there was a couple of big spikes that were mimicking that panic, the first one of which peaked in May 24, 2010. I think that was the European crisis. And the next one was in August of 2011, which was our own United States debt crisis. After then, it has been a steady state of lower and lower and lower peaks in the VIX. So that fear has been getting systematically tamped down in a very regular fashion. And so people aren't really even bothering glancing at the rearview mirror anymore because they figure that with all this QE, things are pretty solidly under control. What I've noticed as a technician myself, though, and as a very active investor, is that there is a very subtle change happening as we speak, which is that those peaks in the VIX are getting a tiny bit higher each time now. So my view is that there is a little fear starting to leak back into the market, but as opposed to VIX at 90, when the VIX gets up to, say, 21, then it's headline news.
Yeah, and it's healthy, too, when you think about it, because you want to have some fear in the stock market. If there's no fear, then obviously it creates a dangerous type of environment where investors think they can't lose money. Now, let's move on to my final question. You know, it's easy to make fun of previous generations for being suckers for tulips or being suckers for overpriced stocks, Madoff schemes onward and so forth. Yet you make the great point that despite all of the advancements of our modern society, that human behavior throughout the ages has remained rather consistent and constant. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, my sense is that when we look back toward those manias, there's a subtle difference because I don't think we really stared on our nose and think, you know, how foolish past generations were. I think instead we think, oh, well, we've wised, you know, those poor souls didn't have the information and the knowledge and the know-how and the experience that we've got, so we finally figured this out. And I think that the sort of amusing thing is that you never really know when you're in the midst of these things when the madness is peaking. Bitcoin is a great recent example because we saw this creature go from $2 and $3 up to $1,300. And as a contrarian myself, you know, it sort of pressed upon me that when everybody in the media was chattering about Bitcoin and that it equaled the price of an ounce of gold, that might have been a turning point. And it was. And it's lost about 55-60% of its value since then. I'm highly confident that in a few years we'll look back and point to, buying Oculus VR for $2 billion or WhatsApp for $19 billion or any of these other firms that may ultimately go belly up. That are in our internet space as new good examples of how wrong we got it. The thing is, though, that it is terribly difficult to know what the future might hold. If we took a time machine, back to the year 2000, and we stood in the middle of the Sun Microsystems campus. And we got a loudspeaker and said, attention, attention, Sun employees, all of you tens of thousands. We wanted to know, we're from the future, and there is a pimply 17-year-old kid that's going to build a website that is going to completely take over the campus we're standing at here. Oh, and by the way, Sun won't exist anymore. Thank you, goodbye. And as bizarre as that might have sounded, that's exactly what happened. Because 2 miles from where I'm standing is this gigantic campus that used to be Sun Microsystems, and now it's Facebook. So I caution myself, contrarian as I am, to laugh at what might seem to be an incredible future, because some incredible things work out, and some of them go poof, and we can roll our eyes at them once it's already past us. But my hope in writing this book is to at least give people some sense that this is not the first time around the block for people getting passionate about something new and shiny.
The past is insane, and the future may be even more insane. You just heard from Tim Knight, author of a brand new book. It's on our recommended read list, titled Panic, Prosperity, and Progress, 5 Centuries of History and the Markets. It's available at Amazon.com. Go pick up a copy. Tim, thanks for joining us.
Super. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I'm Ron DeLegge. This is the Index Investing Show, and I'll be right back.
Investing Show with Ron DeLegge.
All right, 877-711-5611. We're coming off a great interview there with Tim Knight, author of Panic, Prosperity and Progress. It's a brand new book. And it's on my recommended read list. It is available at Amazon.com. Go pick up a copy. And you can, by the way, listen to an extended version of that interview at my podcast link. It's indexshow.com. And click on the podcast link. And you can listen to that at your convenience. Also, while you're there, you can listen to last week's interview. Another great author. We talked about the psychology of investing and behavioral finance and some of the pitfalls that befall us all, whether we're experienced investors or novices, doesn't matter. The psychology is the same. And so unless we operate in a way that's well-behaved, well, it's going to negatively impact our investment portfolio. So again, indexshow.com, click on the podcast link. If you'd like to join us to talk about a particular stock, mutual fund, ETF, investment theme, 877-711-5611 is the number. Talked a little bit earlier about Warren Buffett and his latest letter to Berkshire Hathaway shareholders, basically recommending low-cost index funds to individual investors, basically telling them that's his advice. Go with an S&P 500 index funds. And I, a couple of years ago, gave up on these dull and boring diversification pie charts. Instead, I began illustrating portfolio diversification as the various beef cuts of a cow. So this has become my mascot, so to speak, is this cow that I've carved up into all the different asset classes, the major asset classes, not like U.S. or domestic stocks, emerging market stocks, international stocks, real estate, commodities, cash, government bonds, corporate bonds, alternatives, collectibles. These are all the major asset classes. And at a very minimum, while Buffett advises that people should look at holding an S&P 500 index fund, that's nice. That's a good start. That's a good beginning. But at a very minimum, a truly diversified portfolio should also include other major asset classes, not just U.S. stocks. What about real estate? What about Treasury inflation protected securities? What about bonds? What about commodities? What about cash? See, these are all aspects of building a diversified portfolio. You can do that with the same type of low-cost indexing that you get with an S&P 500 fund. There are ETFs touching these very asset classes, and you can utilize that same strategy that Warren Buffett blesses, the low-cost indexing strategy, which, by the way, I think that's the title of this program, isn't it? I think it's called the Index Investing Show. And this is what Buffett is preaching in this year's latest letter to Berkshire Hathaway shareholders. And by the way, he's done this consistently over the past decade. He's talked about this same type of investing, this no-frills, low-cost indexing, which will beat not just the vast majority of investors, but the vast majority of professional investors on Wall Street, even some of these highfalutin hedge funds and venture capital funds that seem like they're sexy, that look like they're outperforming, but really, when we get down to it, net of fees, net of taxes, they're probably lagging. They're probably lagging a low-cost portfolio of index funds. So the solution for you, the individual investor, the solution for me is to build our portfolio in a way that minimizes cost, maximizes potential returns, reduces our tax liabilities, and helps us to reach our financial goals. 877-711-5611 is the number. My April ETF Profit Strategy newsletter has just been released to the wild, and I don't have time to get into all the details, but one of the things I want to briefly mention is our April income trade. Many of our listeners are income starved. You're looking for more income. Well, we featured recently, when I say recently, just in the past week or two, a specific ETF ticker that has a yield that is 50% higher than the S&P 500's yield. Furthermore, it has been outperforming the S&P 500 since the beginning of the year, and it's also less volatile. So that's one idea for our subscribers and listeners. That particular ticker symbol at etfguide.com, you got to be a subscriber. The other thing that we did was our April income trade, where we've got a hypothetical $100,000 all ETF portfolio. We sell monthly covered calls to generate high income. And this particular month, we always do it for the month in advance. So for April, we generated $758 in monthly income from our latest trade. Now, since February 2012, when we originally introduced our income mix portfolio, well, we've generated almost $21,000 of income using this strategy. So it works. And we use it to supplement our dividends that we get from stocks. So when we include the dividends along with the covered call income, well, it's a high-powered strategy. It's the right recipe for today's depressed interest rate environment of near 0% interest rates. And we also take a look at the annualized yield of the income mix portfolio. Well, if we continue what we just did in April, we're looking at an annualized yield of around 9%. That's assuming we can continue getting April's type of income. We, like I said, just generated $758 of monthly income using covered calls on a portfolio of low-cost ETFs. If you want to find out what those particular ticker symbols are, along with the specifics, just go to etfguide.com and become a subscriber. I got a note here from a listener in Murrieta, California, Robert. He's a longtime listener, asking me about Mark Hulbert's latest article in the Wall Street Journal titled, "Are ETFs Really Cheaper Than Open Index Funds?" And after he goes through all of the details, the excruciating details of index mutual funds versus index ETFs, he comes to the conclusion that actually open-end index funds may actually be cheaper on a total ownership basis than index ETFs. And I say, well, that's not necessarily the case. Really, there's so many variables here, ladies and gentlemen, and we can't go into every single variable of the index ETF versus the open-end index fund and which is cheaper because, well, it really depends on where your brokerage account is housed, whether you have a direct account established with an index mutual fund provider. I mean, there's so many variables, and I can't mention all the variables. But what I can say is the one way that you can make sure that your index ETFs are definitely cheaper, and I do believe they are, but only if you do it the right way will they ever be cheaper than open index funds, is first of all to commit trade commission-free. So that means a brokerage firm like, for example, a Charles Schwab or a TD Ameritrade, and there are others that offer commission-free trading with ETFs. That's one way to obviously make the cost of the ETF cheaper, but then also stick with the ones that have the lowest expense ratios. That's another way. And again, I think Charles Schwab is doing an outstanding job. If you just put together a portfolio of Charles Schwab, and I'm talking not a strategic portfolio, but I'm saying a core portfolio, broad exposure to low-cost areas or low-cost index ETFs and major areas like U.S. stocks, emerging market stocks, bonds, real estate, and so forth, you will definitely have cheaper costs than any open-end index fund, even Vanguard. So that does it for another episode of the Index Investing Show. If you want to send me an email, a question, a comment, at Index Show is my Twitter handle. My email address, ron@indexshow.com. Join us again for another delightful time of money-making opportunities. We'll be here again next week. And until we meet again, may the market indexes be with you.
The opinions expressed in this broadcast are not necessarily that of our advertisers, sponsors, or broadcast partners. The discussion of investing is general and should not be construed as investment advice or an offer to buy or sell securities. Listeners are responsible for their own investment decisions and results. Before investing in mutual funds or ETFs, always consult a prospectus for risk, charges, expenses, and other information. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Past performance is not indicative of future results. No reproduction or dissemination of the Index Investing Show is permitted without the expressed written consent of its producers.